He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Baby, you can drive my car.
Hello to our listeners for this week's version of Car Keys with Jada Markin and Robin Leach. We are in the middle of high gas prices in our listening area. They have gone up in 2 or 3 days, approximately 30 to 40 cents, depending on what station you go by and look at the prices on the billboards. In a recent show, we discussed AAA's ideas of how to be driving in an economical state to make the mess, get the best miles per gallon on your gas usage. That was a crazy list, in my opinion. And I think there are 2 or 3 simplified ways to do it, which most people won't do. But here I go with a suggestion. Be feather light on your throttle, on your foot pedal when you're accelerating away from a stoplight or stop signs. Don't goose the throttle because you'll use more gas. If you know how to use cruise control and like it, unlike Jay who does not, that also helps get maximum mileage in general if you are able to use it for much of a drive, mostly long distance drives, better than local driving around our local roads with stop signs, stop lights, intersections, and the like. Also, for gasoline cars, turn them off when you're not needing to use the engines. I go to the local post office and people are letting their engines run. It may be because of cold weather, keeping them warm, but using engines, leaving the engines running while not going any distance in a moving condition eats up the gas as well.
Those are three,
and I'm stopping there, Jay, unless you've got something to add.
To that note, do you use the stop-start functions on your cars?
I do indeed. I like it. And the people who don't, I think, are just crazy. There are a lot of people who don't like it, but I do when it works. The thing about stop-start I found is if you stop with the steering wheel straight ahead in my Jeeps, it works pretty well. If you let your foot drop, fall off the pedal and try to put it back on while you're still stopped, it will not restop the car engine. It'll start the engine and then leave it running. If you turn your wheel while in a stopped condition on my Jeeps, it also starts the motor running. So it's useless if you're standing still and you turn the steering wheel to turn left or right out of your stopped condition. Other than that, it does work when it works. If you keep your foot on the brake firmly during the entire time, you want to keep it stopped. And it starts up very quickly when the lights go green or when you want to start up from a stop sign. And it should not disturb the people I feel it's disturbing.
I think it works better on some cars than others, but I tend to agree with you. On the cars that have it, I don't usually mind it. And usually there's a trick, like you say, wiggle the steering wheel and the engine will start. So you can be prepared to, you know, be the first to go at the green light. So what else can you do?
I find that when I'm in a two-lane road or a three-lane road going the same way at a stop sign, that may be something that you might do, but I don't think it's going to save any significant amount of gas or use significant by holding it down and just starting up when you want to start moving immediately when the light goes green. It is a very quick operating situation on my vehicles. Jay, you had a nice, interesting list of things to discuss about topics on this show. Do you want to start by talking about the used electric market, the vehicle market being the best way to buy an electric vehicle, especially since they lose a lot of their money when you drive a new one right off the lot?
Well, we talked about that a few weeks ago about the leased electric cars, cars that were on lease, and 2023s coming on the market, and that seems to be confirmed that, you know, there are a bunch of good EVs that you can buy under $20,000, you know, 23s and 24s, I do think that is the way to go, and it's kind of ironic because EV sales are down 40% in January versus a year ago. And we know the whole, and it's a worldwide thing. You know, the EV market is you know, it's a roller coaster. I still don't understand how car manufacturers can change their, you know, strategies and long-term strategies from going all EVs because they were kind of forced to do that to now backing off completely. And then you have the smarter ones like Toyota who've, you know, cautiously gone the EV route by making most of their lineup the vehicles hybrids. I hate to say it, but that seems to have been the right strategy. But bottom line is, yes, you can get good EVs for quite affordable cars. And at this juncture, with the price of gas being what it is, we may see, I don't know, we'll see if there's a jump in EV sales and certainly used EV sales. What surprised me in the January sales is that even though sales are down 40%, and we've all picked on Tesla, their sales being down for all sorts of reasons, not necessarily related to the product, as we know, but their market share, Tesla's market share, has still increased in the overall EV market, which I thought was interesting. But it's still peanuts. It's still 5% of the new car market. So I don't know where this is going. Companies like Porsche are making a quick upgrades to their Cayennes, their gasoline powered Cayennes, a model that came out in 2017, I think, in Europe. And they're slapping new front end and rear end on it and making some minor changes, but they're going to sell it alongside their electric Cayenne.
I was out to dinner over a recent weekend and I happened to be sitting next to a table of people. And
I saw you had your Audi A8 out.
The discussion was about contemplating the purchase of an electric car. So to the point about electric car sales tanking or at least diving or whatever, or lessening from recent higher levels, there are people out there that actually like having an electric car. It's just that the manufacturers have got to decide at what level of models electric cars are appropriate. And I'm not sure the Cayenne is the level is appropriate, or even the Cadillac levels are appropriate, unless you're driving long distances and that's all you want, and you get the cars that have got the biggest batteries that can give you the longest distance between charging situations. But certainly for around town, this somewhat goes to the plug-in hybrid level of electric fossil fuel vehicles as well. Electric cars are perfectly fine, as Jay, as you have said, in the past shows, I say and agree with you, if you're not a long-distance driver on a regular basis, and this is the only car you have, or maybe one of two cars you have in your family, because all the electric cars that get 200 miles or more are never going to be used 200 miles a day, and you just plug them in at night, and you'll never have to buy gasoline again. We talked recently about longevity of batteries. It doesn't seem to be a problem. The batteries seem to be fairly reliable, and reliability is apparently improving in new designs of electric batteries all the time. We do have periodic articles about fires that have started from electric batteries in cars, which is not very encouraging if you are parking your car in a garage and or getting an electric car. If you're prone to be very subjected to seeing articles about electric batteries exploding. I don't think it's a real problem, but one is too many in the news world. If a story comes out on the news about electric car fire.
Speaking of new electric cars, a couple cars I think that are interesting. The Rivian is coming out.
The R2.
The R2.
Yes, very interesting.
It is. It will be on the roads by the end of the year. I think it's coming out in third quarter. Is that, am I correct?
I believe so, if they get it on schedule.
And it looks like a
$50,000 price range, is it, before you start adding features?
Correct. Depending on the, you know, they have what, three levels of, as most electric car manufacturers seem to do, like three levels of base model with a two-wheel drive, which is Rivian's first two-wheel drive model. A long range, you know, the one that makes a lot of sense, mid-range level, you know, long range, mid power. We're talking 300, 330 mile range, which is, you know, perfectly adequate.
Absolutely.
And 450 horsepower, which is, you know, 15 years ago, a car with 450 horsepower would have been a hypercar or a supercar. I mean, this is insane amount of power, and very usable power, right? I mean, so it's perfectly adequate. And then they have a top of the line. Of course, they have to have a sport model that's going to put out, I can't remember if it's 600 or 650 horsepower. But yes, the price range will be in the $50,000 to I guess maybe $75,000 range. I'm looking forward to seeing that. I think it's going to be a hot ticket. We have seen quite a few R1s around here, and you know, then these vehicles are, you know, right around the $100,000 mark when all is said and done. So, yeah, looking forward to that, and also curious about Mercedes' next flop, but hopefully not, coming out with what looks like an electric minivan. And
looking vehicle.
Yeah, if you like minivans, but and we know that people don't really like them, although they may be.
Well, I think that may be changing.
I agree with you. And also they're not marketing it as a minivan, they're marketing it as a luxury vehicle.
And it will cost.
And what's that? I missed
it
that.
It will cost.
It will cost,
so,
for sure.
Again, just to inject it, because I read the article, or I looked at all the pictures of the article that you submitted to me on it, and it was very interesting looking at the seat, various seat configurations. And the first thing that I bring up to listeners is I have a Eurovan, and I got what they called an MV version. And it had in the center and rear seats that faced each other. And one of the first pictures in the Mercedes van were sets of twin bucket seats facing each other. And that'll be at a price that'll be probably six figures by the time you load one up, don't you think? But it's a very interesting design. There will be people, I commented to you, Jay, in that list I sent back to you, I commented about how stupid and unrealistic I thought the Mustang Dark Horse was going to be in terms of a 700 horsepower vehicle at the price it was going to be at. Why waste your money? But then I said to you, much better place to spend wastable money if you have it, or even high amounts of money if you have it, on the Mercedes luxury minivan than to go out and buy a Mustang Dark Horse.
So, speaking of these, muscle cars like the latest Mustang Dark Horse.
Who needs them?
Life is about more than just bare needs, but you may want them. But you know, in places like Florida, pretty soon you're not going to be able to rev your vehicle. It's going to be illegal to rev up your vehicle. So
my comment to you on that was, who's going to be there to listen to everybody revving their vehicles to give them a ticket?
Oh, don't worry. Cops will be right there. They'll find a good reason.
No, they won't. Because you won't rev it if you've got a cop visually available.
Okay. We'll see. But then again, you could show up with a 1,000 horsepower electric vehicle and make no noise, and they'll just zip off the line.
Correct.
So, we'll see how that works. But I agree with you. I think, you know, But again, the Mustang Dark Horse is really a supercar. It's like a Corvette.
Well, it's for a Jay Leno type collector that wants to have the best and has the money to buy it and hopefully drive it every day, not just drive it once in a while.
But like most cars these days, even, you know, even a basic Toyota Camry, I mean, these cars have performance that is virtually impossible to extract on the roads. So yeah, you're left with track days and having car collections sitting in your garage. By the way, I saw you had your, speaking of car collections, I saw you had your, did you have your Audi A8 out on the road this weekend?
The roads were very nice and dry, no salt that I could, applications that I could find. And yes, I did. And, you know, it is, that's got a 4.2 liter V8 engine. And I got to tell you, is, few times as I really used the performance factor of that engine, it has all the power starting off from a stop sign and or passing a car that anybody needs, as we've been talking frequently in our electric car discussions about how crazily fast electric cars are. You don't need a car that's why I say the dark horse is stupid with 700 horsepower. You know, I have a 95 Mustang GT with a supercharger in it, and no, it won't go from 0 to 60 in 2.7 seconds or whatever. And I don't care. You've discussed on this show about how you've got to hold on to your body when you're in these seats of these electric cars that have extraordinary acceleration, leaving a stop sign or a stoplight. Who needs it? You know, I'm tired of the magazine spending time talking about how fast you can get from 0 to 60 anymore, because anything under 6 seconds is adequate for most people, I would say, 0 to 60. And with a decent acceleration capability when you're trying to pass cars or getting onto a interstate highway with traffic whizzing by you at 75 miles an hour or more, especially when you have these lawn ramps that have stop lights that you have to wait till they go green before you can even enter the travel lane.
So, speaking of driving and you know, roads and speed limits and what you can do on the roads or not, you know, I was in Europe the last 2 weeks, and I drove from Belgium to Switzerland, which is about a 500-mile drive, with a good portion of that being through France. And they were not all major highways, but there was not a speed limit that was over 115 Ks, which is about 65 to 70 miles an hour, which is kind of shocking. But in that case, it was borderline adequate, but it was also very well enforced, and there was no way in beating the system. I mean, they have radar, fixed radars, pretty much every few miles.
Miles or kilometers? I know we're kilometers in Europe, but you keep using miles. It's okay for our listeners here. But to that point, did you have anybody passing you, or were you trying to go the maximum speed limit? And did people occasionally go by you at extraordinary speeds in France, or was it pretty? Was it
not really? Because I was with a friend who had, you know, a little device that pretty much tells you exactly where all the radars are, and the fact is, we even with, you know, detection equipment, if you will, there's just so many that you don't have the opportunity to go fast, and people who do on many roads, and most people have all this detection equipment, and most people also know that, you know, the laws are there, the enforcement is there, and it's just, you get used to just driving the speed limit. And
two things to bring up, or one thing. First of all, you it's really mandatory that you have plates on both ends of your car in Europe, right? Unlike here, where, for example, many cars around here, including mine, do not have front plates to be picked up by photo radar. The other thing is, I notice a lot of people here still, there are cars with these plate covers that are designed to, I think they, I don't know whether they are successful in disguising the plates from Easy Pass.
It doesn't matter because they're mostly all those gizmos are pretty much illegal in most states. So
I understand that, but then there's no enforcement. I mean, I've never, you know, I say there's no enforcement. There's such little enforcement numerically in our roads around here. It's hard to know whether there is enforcement because when I'm on a highway and a car goes by me and I can't read the numbers on the plate because it's got a shot, you know, a plate cover that's obscuring easily the numbers. There's several cars that new car owners are putting them on, and there are car owners that have had them on for years. But I don't think you can get away with it in Europe. Not that we have to worry about it on our show, but it is a comment.
No. So, yeah, what else did you have on your list?
Well, I'm looking at the final assembly section of one of my weekly automotive news things, and I have something for Lego lovers. Lego has a Model T moment with a new set of Legos. It is designed, if you want to go buy it, it sells for $130. It's a 1,060-piece assembly process, and it's got a picture of a Ford Model T here, and it looks wonderful. And since I happen to be in a family that loves Legos, I'm not a Lego person. I've never assembled a Lego set in my life, but I think for automotive enthusiasts, this is outside the driving side of things, but it might be for a collector of people who like to do Legos and would like to have a Model T Lego on a table in their house. That's one comment. Let's see. You know, I'm interested to see what's going to happen with this Bolt. I just read the Motor Trend review of the new Bolt, and they've got a complaint about the seats being cheaper than apparently the old Bolt. Undersized in the rear.
Does it really matter? It's going out of production.
I know. That's another. I want to say, and it's my opinion only, I think this is a bad moment of automotive decision on GM's part for the sake of being able to loosen up a plant to produce another car. I think it's electric, isn't it? Or whatever.
But I'm not sure.
Today, you have talked very positively about the Bolt. I liked it too. I think we were just talking earlier in this show about what's an affordable electric car. A Bolt is an affordable electric car, which would be the perfect car. And everybody I've ever run into around our corner who's had a Bolt has loved it. The perfect electric car to keep in production at an affordable price. And it defies the need for an electric, you know, a tax credit, even at its price. So I think this is a very bad automotive decision. I am critical of the American automotive decisions because they don't seem to have much staying power when they produce a good vehicle. And the Bolt is one of those vehicles, despite Motor Trend's complaints about some of the interior aspects of the new version. I suspect the people know enough about the Bolt that they will buy every one of those Bolts that are built before the assembly plant stops. In less than a year now, right?
I think so. It's the end of this year.
Yeah,
we'll see. I mean,
we'll see.
Safety tips. I was skiing this weekend and went did a ski clinic and Robin, you're a skier too, and you teach skiing like I do. And it's funny as we go through clinics, we are taught things that we teach every day. So. And this tip was about looking at where you want to go, because again, you're going to go where you're looking. Right. And it's not looking at where you're going. It's looking at where you want to go. And I thought this is a good reminder of when you're driving a car, you don't want to look at look ahead and far ahead and where you want to go. And don't look at the tree or the phone pole, because that's where you're going to end up. And it's easier said than done. It takes practice and it takes discipline.
It's very interesting about paying full attention, because I have noticed that even I do it, and this is a guilty situation, which I do not like. If I am looking at something on the side of the road, like it could be a fire, it could be a bear, it could be something.
Yeah, like a bear? We know that story.
I have one hand on the wheel, probably. Maybe I don't. Maybe I have both hands. I tend to lean my hands on the driving wheel, sometimes oversteering to the right of the road if I'm looking to the right. It's a very dangerous habit.
Your hands are going to follow your eyes.
You said it's hard to correct it if you've got a bad habit. So well, I agree with you. Drivers, you got to keep your, if you're going to have your hands on the wheel and you're on a straight road, you want to keep going straight and not veer off to the right. Don't let your hands follow your eyes if you're looking to your right or you're even the left, because you could go across the yellow line.
Don't try closing your eyes to see if you're still going straight.
Don't try closing your eyes ever.
Anyway, that was the tip of the day for me as far as safety. You
it's
know,
a good tip, but it, you know, it's amazing how many people do it. Well, you know, you see cars wavering, and you don't know whether they're impaired or whether they're distracted or whether they're looking down at something on their dashboard. This is where I have my problem, and I keep trying to remember to keep my, if I'm going on a straight road, to keep the hand not moving. But if I look down at the radio, I can sometimes find my left hand on the wheel. Might have gone up from a 9 o'clock position, which might be the straight position, to a 10 o'clock, and those turn the wheels enough to start going off the road.
Absolutely.
What else do we have? Yeah, that list. There was a Cadillac simplification of model listing. Let's talk about simplification of models.
Let's talk about Cadillac. I mean, yes, I think it's a good thing that Cadillac is simplifying. First of all, this badging thing, to include torque, and Audi does the same thing, to include torque in the badging of the car, it just makes no sense. I mean, it's just so convoluted.
Well, I didn't read it, so I don't know what you're talking about versus Cadillac. But yes, I would agree. If this is in the badging that's on the rear trunk, or
correct.
Is it, a T or a S, like in Supercharger or something?
Yeah,
like
T
that.
For turbo, and then they had the Newton meters, like 800, 900, 400, whatever the maximum torque was, and it just people can't relate to that. So they finally decided to take all that stuff away. And by the way, by the same token, they're simplifying their model line, which is a good thing, because after all these years, I cannot tell you what's in the Cadillac model line. And I think they're streamlining that. I think they have great product, but they realize they need to streamline it. And it's interesting to see how Cadillac has gone. You know, again, I was in Europe talking with a friend whose last memory of Cadillacs was being here 20 years ago and riding in the float boats. And now I tried to tell him that Cadillac has become, you know, the sports sedan manufacturer. They're the only manufacturer really that has a stick shift in all of their, and I think I'm correct in saying that in all of their sedans, there's a version, a high performance version with a stick and a 6-speed transmission. I don't know how long that will last.
Which one? Is it the CTS?
The CT5, the CT4 that's going out of production. I mean, these are cars that are, they're high performance sedans. And, you know, we always think of BMW, Audi, Mercedes. But really, the sportier models, sportier sedans are made by Cadillac, and so there's been a change. There's been a change in their marketing approach. They've been heavily involved in motorsports. They're now involved in Formula One. You know, they just joined the Formula One circus as the 11th team on the circus, I mean, that's a big step. And we'll see where that goes, but it's an interesting brand. I don't know if it was really worth the effort or if they should have just kept building, you know, luxury vehicles and leave it at that, but here we are.
With that ending comment on Cadillac, Jay, I think we're going to end the Car Keys for this week. So until next time, we are Car Keys with Jay DeMarkin and Robin Lee.
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.